Hello, welcome to Pharma Marketing Talk. This is your host, Pharma Guy, also known as John Mack. And today I'm going to be speaking with Jack Barrett, who is the CEO of WeGo Health. And we're going to be discussing a recent study that WeGo Health did on patient engagement from the pharmaceutical point of view. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, John.
Good. How's it up there? Are you in Boston right now?
I'm in Boston. It's hot and sunny, so I am Boston.
Okay. Well, why don't you start by telling people a little bit about yourself and WeGo Health, and then we can get into discussing some of the learnings that you've gotten from this study.
Sure. Well, I'm Jack Barrett. I'm the CEO of WeGo Health, founded about 8.5 years ago. We're the only network of patient influencers. We focus as an organization exclusively on those patients who are the bloggers, the tweeters, the community leaders of the health space, who really become influential in working with and counseling other patients as folks who are interacting with them on a frequent basis. We now have over 100,000 patient influencer members who are part of our organization. They do things like find speaking engagements and learn from each other, get educational content, and participate in our awards program to become part of the WeGo Health Network. We're really proud to have a relationship with these 100,000 very influential folks who we see as the drivers of true healthcare change, and certainly folks who are obsessed with patient engagement. You know, what WeGo Health does with companies is, you know, activate that network of 100,000 influencers for to reach tens of millions of followers of hyper-engaged patient consumers. So obviously these guys are very excited about the topic of patient engagement. That's what they're about. That's what they do every minute of every day. And they want companies to come along for the ride. That's why we did this survey.
So how do you want to start? You want to give a few top level results or describe the survey a little bit more?
Sure. The reason that we did a patient engagement study for the pharmaceutical industry is because really patient engagement has become an incredibly hot topic, and probably a good way to think of it, John, is that it's defined by the meaningful use part of the Affordable Care Act, which is, you know, expecting providers to engage with the patients who use things like patient portals and EMRs. This whole idea has really caught fire across the healthcare ecosystem. And pharma companies are saying, well, one thing to be patient-centric, which means we kind of think about the patient in the middle. There's another thing to be patient-engaged, which means we're actually interacting with these people and collaborating and making them a part of our world. One thing to look at them, the other thing to talk to them. So that's why we wanted to take up the patient engagement mantle and really look at industry by industry, what scorecard can we create? How can patient influencers, who of course are out there with millions of patient followers every day, really help industry to understand what they're doing well, what they could do better to truly engage with patients, to begin collaborating versus just, you know, petting them like zoo animals, if you will. So we surveyed about 116 patient influencers in May. And ask them a group of questions that we'll ask longitudinally over time. We're going to ask in other industries as well, but the outcome for pharma was really interesting to us, because having worked a long time in connecting patient influencers to pharmaceutical companies for research and insight, as well as social promotion, that kind of thing, you know, we're seeing an evolving relationship between industry and patient influencers. And the big takeaway for us is there really is optimism among the patient influencers, who are saying things that we'll talk more about this. Look, we really want to engage more. There's not enough engagement, period, in the pharmaceutical industry, hard stop. But we see in the next 12 months, things will be better, that the efforts will be more effective, that more companies will make efforts, and we have some ideas about how you can take action on them. So it's not a, this will never get any better, where we've given up. It's a, look, not enough people are doing it, but those who are doing it pretty well. And we welcome more people to do it, and we have ideas for you. So that's really the fun takeaways. And there's things like, you know, how we talk about what they're seeing for the optimism and specific tactics we can get into as we talk about the study a little bit.
Right. So I see you asked about the level of patient engagement for a number of different stakeholders. You have healthcare providers, pharmacists, government hospitals, and pharmaceutical companies and payers. And pharma wasn't on the lower end of that, but they were, what, second lowest or third lowest or something score?
Yeah, out of a group of seven, they were five. they were above payers and they were above government, which is probably not a terrible thing. As you'd expect, hospital doctors and nurses were far and away number one in terms of their patient engagement.
One interesting insight that I learned from the results is that most respondents do not feel that pharma companies are working collaboratively with patients and patient leaders. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. We look at it as a bit of a wake-up call, right? That most participants felt that pharma companies are not working collaboratively with patients and patient leaders. And I think what's important is to note that they're saying, most companies are not doing it. And that's what the industry should take away. And companies who are not collaborating with patients should say, well, gee, we're being told that we really should be. And there's also a fairly tough love stat that, we asked them, which one do you consider to be most accurate? Do pharma companies understand the needs of real patients and don't do enough to address them, or do they not understand the needs of patients, right? So we said, look, do they just not get it, and that's why they're not engaging, or do they understand that they're choosing not to engage? And actually, they were about to split between those, right? Very, very few people said, pharma companies understand the needs of real patients and do everything they can to address them. Only less than 10% of our participants said that. So that's not a good stat. And the other two, the rest of the folks split about 50-50 between, companies do understand our needs, but they're not doing enough for us, which is, we think, real tough love, right? You get it, but you're choosing not to act on it. And that's the opportunity, though, is to take some action on that.
Just this morning, I was reading about the failure of Pfizer clinical trial to get Lipitor approved for over-the-counter sales. Some analyst blamed patients for not complying with instructions to check their cholesterol level, which the FDA was requiring to be demonstrated that patients can do that with an over-the-counter product. It seems to me, though, that perhaps patients were not properly engaged and in the design of the trial.
Well, I think you've definitely hit on the holy grail of patient engagement, right, which is true behavior change. So when I look at that finding, I didn't see it, but when you describe it, it makes sense to me. Look, cholesterol management, asymptomatic, people think of it as largely older men, very unlikely to do anything proactive to monitor or manage their care. And that's not new, but what can change that, what can really genuinely change behavior, is social interaction and patient engagement, right? And this has been shown over and over again in nurse call lines and that kind of thing. When companies spend the money on the high end of the cost scale to reach out to patients, patients like that, they respond to it and their behavior changes. That happens organically in the patient community, where patients help each other to get through things like side effects or stay adherent, but it's not as organized or supported by industry as it could be. So if I were to be prescriptive to Lipitor, I would say, look, but what are you doing to engage patient leaders to help you motivate their followers in the heart health communities to say, look, you've got to monitor your cholesterol as part of how you keep these medications on the market, how you make them available to you, is to be sure you're doing that. And this is how you do it. So that social support, that patient engagement is very often the missing link between, pushing educational materials out at patients and having them actually change their behavior.
Right, and that goes toward adherence as well, a problem that the industry has been trying to grapple with for a number of years.
That's right.
But in terms of what patients would like to see more of, I wanted to talk a little bit about the three top things that the patients in your study feel are the most effective ways for pharma companies to engage with patients. And top of the list were these three things: the patient advisory boards, materials using real patients, and becoming active in the online community. There's a lot here to talk about. We want to review the results of that particular part of your survey for us?
Absolutely. Yeah, we gave folks specific opportunities for companies or examples of companies engaging with patient groups and said, which one of these do you think is most effective? And as you said, the number one was patient advisory board. So, you know, what that speaks to is the difference between, as I said, you know, patient centricity. Let's look at patients and you know, through the bars and collaboration. So, patient advisory boards, you know, speaks to, you know, have a group of patients, and we do a lot of this at WeGo Health, where patient leader advisory panels are set up for companies to interact with on an ongoing and frequent basis. Right, they're essentially always in the conference room next door virtually, and folks communicate with them through, you know, mobile platforms or online discussion groups and focus group kind of settings to ask them specifically, you know, how to do everything from design a clinical trial to how to design marketing material. So those advisory boards and the fact that, you know, patients know they're there, patients look at leadership of their communities as you know, integrated and collaborating with pharma companies is a critical step and something that's easy and regulatory painless to do, right? We see it transformational in the companies, patients, the companies who have actually gone beyond just, you know, having folks to their company once a year for coffee and a summit or something like that, and saying, let's interact with these guys as an advisory panel, get very excited about the genuinely, you know, useful input that they give and the kind of the intellect that patient leaders especially bring to the table. So advisory boards are growing. I think, you know, what's happening now is there are enough companies that have done a good job of doing it that the word is out among patient leaders that some companies are doing this. Everyone should be doing it. I should be on a patient advisory board because I have a lot to help it say.
Correct me if I'm wrong. So WeGo Health has a few of these patient advisory boards that work with specific pharmaceutical companies. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yes. Many of them actually has become a big part of our work.
Okay. I was just wondering, are these like ongoing patient advisory boards? Are they ad hoc? Or they're, you know, what's the difference between that and focus groups, for example, which I know pharma companies have been doing for a long time. I don't know how scientific that is, or, you know, it's not at the level of an advisory board. How would an advisory board be different than a focus group?
It's a great question. So, you know, one, for WeGo Health, the difference is who's on the advisory board. It would be patient influencers, patient leaders, right? So community leaders who can speak on behalf of usually 10, 15, 20,000 followers each. And therefore, they've got that ability to kind of represent the larger community, even though there may be 40 or 50 people on the board total. So that's one, is who's on it. And two is, it is not a one-off, right? Let's create a relationship with a group of patients and check in with them frequently. Well, we use a couple of different platforms, as we talked about on your show before. We have one called Truvio, where folks use a smartphone on the pharma side to push things out onto the advisory board. Say, look at this on your smartphone. Tell me what you think. Even record your voice comments, and I could hear those. That can happen within a few days. That, you know, even brand marketers can say, hey, I'd like to have you look at the early stage concepts here, so we make sure that they're authentic for the community, and they get feedback back in 2 or 3 days. So that's happening on a, you know, sometimes a couple times a month basis over the course of a year for a brand at the tactical level. And at the more senior level, we also mix in web meeting like engagements, a little bit like a focus group style, but again with a group of patient leaders who are expected to be called on and get called upon regularly throughout the year. So it's not a one off. It's a relationship with a group of patient leaders who then become, you know, true advisors to the company.
Okay. I also see here, the thing that interests me also is about developing materials using real patients versus, you know, models and actors. And that's always been of interest to me because I've followed this over the years. Just today I blogged about Novartis working with Cyndi Lauper, who is a celebrity. Or used to be a celebrity. I guess she still is. It was related to psoriasis, and they have a social site they call it a community, where they are collecting real patient experiences. You know, Novartis obviously says, whatever you say here, we can use in our marketing and so on. And they do edit it, and it's not a real dialogue, but, you know, they are trying to get the crowd, as it were, to submit their experiences and learn more about what it is to live with psoriasis. Is that the kind of engagement that your survey responders have are thinking about, really?
Well, I think it is, exactly. So there's a lot of layers to this. I love this topic, and I think you do too, right? Which is, you know, DTC ads that tick off the real leaders of the community and work against what they should be doing. And we heard this both in the kind of quantitative results of the survey and in the comments that people were asking, were leaving in open fields, that don't like, you know, fake models, you know, portrayals, things that don't represent our disease accurately. There's no benefit to you to do that, especially when we're dealing with something with, you know, RA or MS, where we have these people gambling across fields. Believe it or not, that's still happening, and there's just no appetite for that. And they even go further to say that television advertising is wasting a lot of my time as a patient leader, because I'm constantly managing patient expectations in my communities, because TV ads come on, they wowie-powie people with inauthentic images or unrealistic expectations. I have to manage those. I don't like it. I wish companies would get their act together on that. It was pretty clear and pretty stern. And that said, they've also said, look, when companies do use even celebrities who truly suffer from the disease, and they can speak authentically about the disease, that's okay. It's not, celebrities aren't bad. Celebrities have to have the disease and be able to represent it authentically and realistically. That's okay. So it really comes down to that authenticity. But you know, there's just kind of a growing drumbeat, and this hasn't gone away since the beginning of our work with influencers, that, you know, especially TV can portray unrealistic expectations for patients that patient leaders are left having to manage. And, well, you know, Novartis does a nice job in several places, sorry, John, of saying let's get real patient stories into our sites, and that's kind of genuine interaction engagement with expected moderation and all the regulatory stuff that goes along with it. In its Gilenya site, Novartis broke a lot of ground by asking for patient stories to be contributed to their brand.com on a branded website. It was one of the first ones that did that. So does build on it. And there's work to be done. It's hard, right? It's much harder than just getting actors and portrayals and, you know, pick stock photography to say, which person do you look like? But getting the real people absolutely pays off for companies, and the companies that do it well get rewarded by the community.
According to the respondents of this survey, one of the three most effective initiatives that pharma can get involved with to increase patient engagement is to become more active in the online patient community. Considering all the regulations and fear that the pharmaceutical industry has of engaging in conversations in social media and online with patients, how do you think the patient advocates and leaders in your survey and in WeGo Health believe that pharma can increase its participation in discussions online?
Well, it's interesting. This is, again, a place where patient leaders have become educated about FDA. You know, WeGo Health testified at the initial FDA social media guidelines hearings in 2009. I know you were there. And we've seen these guys get more sophisticated and say, look, some companies have been able to have conversations with us online, and they're not as real-time as we'd like them to be. They're not everyone is doing everything every place that they can be, but there are some companies doing it. So how can some companies do it and not others? The other thing that they say is, look, hire a couple of lawyers to think about this and moderate it and help you with it full time. You're a $50 billion company. We know you can afford to do this. And by the way, we all want you there. We're all talking about your products. And that's the real motivation, John, right? Is we're engaging with your products without you. And we have questions, and we're trying to interpret science, things that you know better than we do. We want you to come and help us understand this. It's not committed to the Shark Tank so we can chew you up. You've got the expertise, and we really need it here. Help us out.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I think you might have touched on something that I thought about in terms of lack of resources or commitment to allocating the proper resources to do this. You mentioned hiring lawyers, but also hiring, you know, people who are working full time on that, and there's also you know, a move to do, to have chief patient officers and things like that, that I think you need to have more of a commitment to allocate resources. But how does that work sometimes with pharma? It might be a problem when you have a typical life cycle of marketing a product. You know, when you're first on the market, you tend to do a lot with patients and marketing and advertising. And then when the product gets old, well, you sort of abandon all that.
There's absolutely, John, I mean, there's a reality of LOE, right? That when products are heading for their loss of patent and, you know, and resources start to disappear from a financial perspective, a team perspective for marketers who are engaging patients in the online community, especially, that it can be hard for those resources to be justified. But, you know, our opinion and what, you know, we see some companies doing is, you know, being committed to the patient community for the long haul. And, you know, things as simple as patient advisory panels are not onerously expensive by the standards of pharmaceutical marketing, and keeping that live and active and even talking with that advisory panel saying, look, we need to ratchet back some of these efforts. Which ones do you think are most effective? Which ones would impact the community the least or the most? They can help you with making those decisions in a very, you know, realistic and authentic way. They're perfectly capable of saying that, oh, budget needs to be trimmed. Let's help you do the right trimming. And I think that last step of asking patient leaders to help with those kinds of decisions is the one that you know, we see some companies just thinking of making. We're doing work with a company that's launching a drug next year that, unfortunately, I can't mention, that's really thinking hard about, you know, all the way from pre-launch through LOE, how are we going to be sure these guys are feeling a part of, and we're asking them in time for actual changes to be made, right? Not saying, well, we made this change, how can we tell people about it so they won't be mad? They're saying, which change should we make? How should we make them? I think that's a big part of it. But and it also gets to the, you know, of course, the beyond the pill rhetoric, which, you know, largely has kind of come to mean if I throw enough value add stuff around a medication, I can get more NRX sales. But I think that beyond the pill vision does have to come to life for pharma. Pharma gets that now, and engaging with the patient community, providing value to the larger community beyond an individual medication is absolutely what you're describing. It's hard if you're a one product company in one disease category, and it, you know, comes and goes in the life cycle, then you have to manage your resources carefully. But if you've got any kind of a commitment to a therapeutic category, it's, you know, staying committed to that category at the category level is crucial. And Sanofi's done it with their kind of groundbreaking social media efforts, which, you know, hopefully they'll continue to gain that advantage of being more involved with the community than other companies, for example.
In the diabetes area you're talking about.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, getting involved with social media and patients requires not just resources, it requires, you know, the long-term planning and how you're going to proceed to the stages. And I guess moving away from some of these pilot projects, you know, that just come and go. One other thing on this list that I was interested in is hosting blogger summits or working with bloggers, I guess. And a lot of the patient advocates in WeGo Health are bloggers, I assume. And there's no reason why they should not work with the pharmaceutical industry. What do these bloggers want to get out of these summits? I know that Johnson & Johnson used to do this a number of years ago, and I'm not sure if any other pharma companies are currently doing that.
Yeah, it's become kind of a box to check in a good way for many, many brands that say, let's host the patient leaders from our category on an annual basis. Sometimes it used to be done at the company headquarters, and they would kind of drag people in and get to know them when it was still brand new. But now it's taking, I think, a much more interesting form, which is let's do it aligned with the major medical meeting at ASCO, for example, if we have an oncology product. So that's a nice way to get patient leaders together at a meeting they probably couldn't otherwise afford to go to, and working with the company on kind of interpreting what comes out of that kind of an event. So, and what patient leaders tell us they like is, it's an extension of the advisory board answer, right? It's like, this is one way you can interact with us that we like. But also the summits, which are live events, provide that kind of of unique opportunity for people who live their lives, you know, lonely at the top of an online community, you know, behind a keyboard where they could be dogs for all we know. They're now together, you know, and they're together at the meeting. They're meeting each other. They get tremendous benefit from learning from each other and comparing notes as leaders. And then that alone is a benefit for them of having the company bring them together in the one spot and kind of, you know, build a program with and for them. We've been done some programs where we'll take a nascent, you know, niche therapeutic area or a niche cancer where there's not a terribly organized leader community yet and bring in someone from the diabetes community or from the MS community where there's such great experience and the leadership there of the patient communities and have those kind of gurus of health patient leader communities teach the folks who are just kind of getting up to speed on the skills of being a leader and growing a community. So that's been, people love that, kind of getting out of even their therapeutic area box and learning from each other.
Well, I agree, getting out of the box and getting out there in the real world is beneficial and meeting people and making contacts, but we're in the online business, so I got to ask, right. And hopefully when they go to these things, they do more than play golf, but let's not get into that. But, you know, recently I was reading about tweet chats that pharmaceutical companies often host during these medical meetings that you were talking about. And most of the time they are focused on physicians because that's who's attending these meetings. But then there's a movement I've been looking at about patients wanting to get more engaged in even those kinds of meetings and maybe those online chats. Do you see a role for patient leaders in that context?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've done a fair amount of work with Twitter chats, and we host one every week at WeGo Health because we have a patient leader community, and they like that forum a lot. We kind of rotate the topic, and we have guest leaders of it. It's always well attended and really interesting, you know, rapid fire communication back and forth. So yeah, there's some regulatory challenges for pharma to do things like branded tweet chats and that kind of thing for obvious reasons, right? Short form communication, that sort of thing. But that's a good example of if patients saw a company doing a weekly, you know, Twitter chat about their product, and with, you know, that's where the lawyer can be standing by and a trained communication professional can be there, and for an hour, they kind of know what they can say and what they can't, and they manage it as spokespeople would in this press, right? They're able to communicate in a realistic way. And because the realities of Twitter, everyone understands there's, you can't control everything, but you can certainly have teed up responses if someone says something off label to say, you know, gee, your comment is clearly an off label use. Sorry, you should click here to read the on label guidance and that kind of thing. It's not impossible. And that may be one of the lightest weight ways where companies can say, I can get a lawyer for an hour. I can get my PR person to kind of be the voice of the brand but be genuine with it. And ideally have a patient leader or someone that we're working with for our TV ads, right? That's authentically involved with the disease, participate in that as well. So, you know, I think that's become one of the first forays into genuine engagement real time with patients.
Well, I think, you know, there's been precedent, and Boehringer Ingelheim has actually written the playbook for how to host the tweet chats. Yeah. And I don't think they mention lawyers in there, but in any case, I am. Well, we've covered a lot, and so we have only a few minutes left. Do you want to summarize any some other points that we haven't covered in a few minutes?
A couple of things that I would say is, you know, we started out by saying, you know, only 10% of people think that pharma companies are doing everything they can to engage with patients. That's a big gap, but it's also an opportunity. And we really see that smart pharma marketers will see that as a window, because one of the stats we kind of haven't talked about is we asked folks, you know, do you think that patient engagement efforts will be more or less effective 12 months from now, right? So will companies who are engaging do a better job 12 months from now or about the same job, or will it be worse? And 10 times more people felt that pharmaceutical company patient engagement efforts would be more effective a year from now than they are today. That's pretty good. So, you know, those who thought it would be, you know, only 5% of people said, it'll be less effective. And, you know, a fair group of people said it'll be about the same, but the most respondents said things will be even better 12 months from now. That's pretty optimistic, right? From folks who said there's a small number of people We wish more of you were doing it, but we think all of you are going to get better at it and do more of it in the coming year. So that's a window. We see that as an invitation from the patient leader community to engage with them, to use some of those specific tactics that are outlined in the report that, as you said, we'll be able to get if you want to download it from your article, and reach out. And because the folks who grab that will, in our opinion, see real competitive advantage. If you've got to have, if you have patient leader advisory boards, if you have your patient summit, if you have authentic advertising built with collaboration from patient leaders, you're going to have an opportunity to really step through that window, take that invitation that they're handing out right now. And that's good news. In the past, pharma has been told, we're not too interested. Now leaders are saying, we see it happening with some, we'd like to do it with all, but let us help you.
Okay. I know we'll have links to the full report, and it's kind of a long URL that probably won't work very well in audio, but you can tell people how to get in touch with WeGo Health, and they can obviously visit your site for more information.
Sure. Well, probably the best thing to do is WeGoHealthSolutions.com. You can find a link to that from WeGoHealth.com, of course, but WeGoHealthSolutions.com is kind of our B2B site for the pharma marketers that I know are your readers and listeners. So that's a good place to go, and the report will also be available there if folks want to download it.
Okay, this is Pharma Guy saying goodbye for now until next time, and thanks for listening.
If he were to criticize your ad campaign, you would have to fight off a strong urge to thank him. If he was to praise your marketing campaign, you would list it on your resume. Whatever side of a pharma marketing issue Pharma Guy's currently on is the right side, even if he crosses over to the other side.